It's part two of our epic history on the Justice League as we move into the modern age and cover the greatest Justice League stories of all time. Unite the League on this week's Geek History Lesson on the Justice League Part 2. Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson. I'm Jason Justice Inman.
And I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson. Welcome to Your Mind University, because you have stumbled onto the podcast where we take one character, construct, or super team from popular culture and teach you everything you need to know about them in about an hour. And this week, we're picking off where we was last week. And
yes,
where was that, Jason?
That is right. This is part two of our epic lesson on the Justice League. We moved sort of into 1996 is as far as we got in part one. So part two, we're going to cover everything else. And if you want to stick around till the end, because at the end of this episode, we're going to be joined by the legendary comic writer Mark Waid, who has written Justice League of America, or JLA, and he wrote what I consider to be the definite origin of the Justice League, the JLA Year One, and he's currently the writer of Captain America. So, you know, skip forward to that, but we want you to listen to the rest, but like, don't go anywhere, basically.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing.
All right, Ashley, just in case people haven't listened to part one, and really, you should listen to part
one. You really should.
I mean, I don't know how you're going to even be able to understand anything in this lesson unless you listen to part one, but Ashley, can you give a real quick recap of what we all learned in part one of Justice League?
So there were some aliens attacking Earth, and the Justice League all real casual-like got together to fight them. They decided to stay together. Green Arrow joined the team, and then Booster Gold joined the team a little later. He made everyone laugh, and wahaha, the Justice League went international. Then it was the 90s. There were like way too many Justice League teams, and then there were none.
Basically, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good recap of episode one. But if you want to hear that with more detail, go.
Jason does a much better job than I do.
I mean, like, everything she said in literally a minute gets said over an hour. So yeah, it's way more explained. Now, first, before we jump into the lesson, we want to say support for this Geek History Lesson this week comes from Boomerang. It is a subscription video streaming service that offers a massive library of timeless cartoons and original animated series. And you can start your adventure today with Boomerang with Johnny Quest. You know that show, Ashley?
I love that show.
Yeah, it's a great show. You can join Johnny along with Special Agent Race Bannon, his best friend Haji, his father Dr. Benton Quest, and their loyal dog Bandit. I love Bandit.
Me too.
They can join them on an action-packed journey across the globe, and you want to join Quest as they discover strange scientific mysteries, then face fearsome foes like Dr. Zinn, pirates, monsters, and even pterodactyls. Now, here's a fun geek history lesson for you. Johnny Quest was actually inspired by radio serials and comics in the action-adventure genre, and featuring more realism in animation. And its popularity motivated Hanna-Barbera to create more action-adventure shows like Space Ghost and Birdman and the Galaxy Trio.
Nice.
So you can find Boomerang on the web, mobile, Apple TV, Amazon Fire, Roku, and Chromecast for only $4.99 a month, or a discounted $39.99 a year, which I think is actually
a great deal.
I would go for the year. So visit boomerang.com/promo and use the promo code GEEK to start your special 30-day free trial today. And thank you to Boomerang for helping to sponsor this Justice League-y episode.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so let's Boomerang into today's lesson. Now, we are after Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Ooh.
Thank Ashley,
goodness.
Real quick, what's Crisis on Infinite Earths? One sentence.
So many Earths, comma. So DC wanted there to be only one Earth, comma. So the Anti-Monitor ate all of the Earths and then pooped out one universe.
All right. That's pretty good. So many commas.
You only let me have one. I should put a semicolon in
so
there.
So the Justice League had their origin amended a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell you about them right now in the post-Crisis on Earth DC universe.
Great.
In 1994's Justice League Task Force number 16, during Zero Hour event, an unknown superhuman named Triumph appeared. It was revealed that in a plotline never explored before, that Triumph was actually a founding member of the Justice League and served as their leader.
If you say so.
Now, on their first mission, with the fledgling Justice League. Triumph seemingly saved the world, but was then teleported into a dimensional limbo that also affected the time stream, resulting in no one having any memory of him. And this was to explain how all of the heroes ended up in Washington for their very first meeting. It's actually a really cool storyline. I actually like that Triumph is like the secret founder of the Justice League, and he's actually popped up a couple other times in DC history.
I didn't know that. I knew nothing about the story, and I will say that I'm surprised that you like it.
I do. Grant Morrison uses him later a little bit, but
so he's probably good there.
We're actually not going to talk about him at all.
Bye, Triumph.
All right, so let's talk about what I consider to be the definite Justice League origin, JLA Year One, which is a 12-issue maxi series that reimagined the origins of the Justice League America for the rebooted post-crisis environment. Now, in this post-crisis environment, Wonder Woman could no longer be a founding member of the JLA.
Why not?
Well, because of the idea that she hadn't come to man's world.
No, I know.
So what they did is they replaced Wonder Woman with Black Canary in this run. Mm. Now, later on, Infinite Crisis actually retconned this history, reinserting Wonder Woman into their history. But for now, in this series, Batman and Superman are marginalized, cast them as part of the team superhero group. And Mark Waid, today's guest, created this book along with Brian Augustin and Barry Kitson. It's a great book. Now, in this book, the heroes are The Flash, real life named Barry Allen, who is oftentimes a bored criminal scientist.
Yes.
Green Lantern, a.k.a. Hal Jordan, overconfident test pilot. Black Canary, a.k.a. Dinah Lance, who not only took over the superhero identity of her mother, but also her flower shop. The alien Martian Manhunter, who disguises himself as the quiet police detective John Jones. And finally, Aquaman, the Lord of the Seven Seas. Now, all of them previously to this series worked together to stop a mysterious alien being, which was actually the Apalachian invasion that I mentioned in part one.
Heck yeah.
And as the five heroes talk about their team effort, they are being monitored by the leaders of the Locust organization. That's where issue one starts off with. Basically, the Apalachian invasion happened right before issue one of the series.
I really like that Mark Waid went back and included that as part of his new origin. Mm-hmm, I thought that was very cool.
Yes. Now, the series begins off where Black Canary has basically arranged a press conference in Gotham City to officially introduce the Justice League to the public. The start is actually a little bumpy, with Aquaman being hard to understand because he speaks underwater and sound travels better underwater. So he's constantly mocked for mumbling,
yeah,
which I love. And The Flash tries to make bad jokes. Luckily, Green Lantern and Black Canary are natural leaders, and they right the ship. And as the questions from various reporters seem to get out of hand, suddenly the group of heroes is attacked by a group of villains that were put together by Vandal Savage that interrupts the press conference.
What a jerk.
Yep. Now, heroes and villains start to battle each other, and because the JLA members are not fighting as a unit, it puts them as a disadvantage, because then the bad guys, especially Solomon Grundy, turn on each other, which the Justice League uses to its advantage and finally defeats their opponents in front of cheering reporters and cameramen.
Woo!
Of course, the incident does not go unnoticed in the superhero community, with former JSA members Alan Scott and Ted Grant are pretty fond of the new quote-unquote kids, and Batman also is not thrilled with the turn of events because he wants the Justice League to have no part of Gotham City. After the press conference, the team is addressed by Simon Carr. Now, Carr's employer wants to stay anonymous, but he takes a high interest in the Justice League's actions and thus wants to provide financial support for the team. But his first caveat of supporting the team,
we love a caveat,
yep, is that he will not reveal who it is. He will not reveal it. Now, eventually, this team offers Superman membership, which he declines, and then they find out that John Jones has been secretly tracking them all. They eventually make good with John, and another Apalachian invades the Earth, and it takes all of Earth's heroes and the new JLA to defeat them, and they eventually reveal their secret identities to each other, and all is good with the world.
Woo!
And eventually, on the last page, the Justice League of America's mysterious beneficiary is revealed, and Ashley, this is a well-known DC Comics character. Who is your guest is the person that financed the Justice League of America right out of the gate?
Lex Luthor.
Incorrect. Oliver Queen.
Oh, I knew that.
Is revealed to be the secret financial
bearer. Yeah.
I actually love that reveal.
Cool.
So, and a little bit of spoilers there for JLA Year One, but whatever.
All right, a 20-year-old.
Now we're going to come back to present day DCU, or about where we left it in 1996.
Cool.
Now, the low sales of the various Justice League spinoff books by the mid-1990s prompted DC to revamp the league as a single team. All various branch teams were immediately disbanded, and they wanted to just form it in a single title. A Justice League of America formed formed in the September 1996 limited series Justice League: A Midsummer's Nightmare by Mark Waid and Fabian Nyessa. In 1997, Justice League DC Comics, launched a new Justice League series titled JLA, written by Grant Morrison with art by Howard Porter and inker John Dell. Now, Morrison stayed as writer for the series until issue number 41.
Wow.
This series was an attempt for a back-to-basics approach and used as its core the team's original and most famous seven members. So when people refer to the Big Seven Justice League, these are basically the roles they're referring to.
It is like hilarious to me that DC went to Grant Morrison, the magical Scottish wizard, and was like, hey, back to basics.
I assume he pitched it.
I would assume so too, but he's not exactly... I know he does a lot of...
He's not the most obvious choice.
I don't think of him when I think of like a very straightforward superhero. So I think of him for grand ideas and concepts.
So his team is Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Aquaman, Flash, this time Wally West, Green Lantern, this time Kyle Rayner.
The best ones.
And the Martian Manhunter. Additionally, the team received a new headquarters, the Watchtower, based on the moon. JLA quickly became DC's best-selling title.
Because it's awesome.
Yep. Now, Morrison's idea for his lineup was to correspond the members of the Justice League with the Olympic Pantheon. Now, eventually expands JLA membership past the Big Seven, and I'm going to give you the roles because you're going to notice there's some names in here that are past the Big Seven.
Cool.
So, Superman is Zeus.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder Woman is Hera.
Mm-hmm.
Batman is Hades. Flash is Hermes. Green Lantern is Apollo. Aquaman is Poseidon. Plastic Man is Dionysus. Steel is Hephaestus. Huntress is Artemis. Orion is Ares. Big Barda is Demeter. And Zariel is Eros. Now, the analogs for Martian Manhunter, Green Arrow, Oracle, and Aztec aren't as obvious.
Okay.
But do you agree with most of those positions for the Justice League compared to the gods?
I agree with most of them. I don't know if I agree with Barda as Demeter.
Okay, why?
Demeter is Mother Nature, essentially. She's the mother of Persephone, you know, who went down to hell and became Hades' wife. Demeter's the mother of the harvest. She's Mother Earth. Barda doesn't give me maternal vibes, you know?
Although in this run, she's very maternal to Orion because her whole role is to control Orion and make sure that he doesn't destroy Earth.
I guess. Look, it's not the worst analog, but it wasn't what I was expecting you to say, really.
Sure.
None of them are wrong.
Yeah.
But that was the one that stands out to me. Yeah.
Okay. Now, I want to kind of take you through the basic plot of Morrison's JLA, and then I want to talk about why I think it is the greatest Justice League run of all time, which I've mentioned several times on this series before.
So ready.
Yep. Now, a new JLA would form after the new villain, calling himself the No Man, kidnapped Dr. Destiny and used his powerful reality altering abilities to cause many of the world's heroes to briefly forget their superheroic identities. No Man revealed a seemingly insane plot to transform the entire population of Earth into metahumans, a move that he said was necessary to combat an upcoming evil. The world's greatest heroes were on the job, however, and No Man was stopped and forced to flee. Now, that oncoming evil would be an ongoing thread in Grant Morrison's run. The then current Justice League, which essentially had been reduced to Metamorpho, Ice, and a couple others, were operating out of the Overmind's Justice League villain, defunct spaceship. The ship was destroyed, and Metamorpho was seemingly killed after the arrival of the Hyper Clan, a team of superpower aliens who arrived on Earth, and they offered to transform the world into a paradise. To that end, they rounded up several supervillains and summarily executed them. Now,
okay,
in this series, Howard Porter drew some nice Easter eggs, and some of the supervillains that they execute are Doctor Doom and Wolverine.
Oh, shut up. That's amazing.
Yep. And you can look at the panels of the pages. It's very clearly Doctor Doom and Wolverine.
I'm literally going to go look for that as soon as this lesson is over.
Now, this, of course, chided the Justice League. They were like, hey, we don't execute people.
Yeah.
But the Good Samaritan routine quickly proved a sham because the Hyper Clan were revealed to be renegade white Martians. And only by joining together could the heroes defeat them. Now, this group decided that this would be the core lineup of a new Justice League America, and using Martian and Kryptonian technology and a lot of Bruce Wayne's money, the team The team quickly built a new base, the Watchtower, on the surface of the moon. This was the first Justice League run to ever have a Watchtower, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the team decided then to have a recruitment drive. Hitman, a DC character created by Garth Ennis, Damage, another Zero Hour character, and Max Mercury did not make the cut, but a mysterious woman named Tomorrow Woman did. And she quickly was revealed to be a highly advanced android built by T.O. Morrow and Professor Ivo to plant inside the new league. But the problem was, is that they gave this android too much free will, and she eventually self-sacrificed herself to save the Justice League.
Aw, the very Grant Morrison-y idea.
Yep, and she was given a hero's funeral by Superman.
Nice.
And that is a one-and-done issue. That
wow.
Her tale, Tomorrow Woman, I think, is one of the coolest members of the Justice League. She's only in one issue.
You think they gave her a statue?
No, they did. It's in the issue.
Oh, that's cool.
You can see it. Like, Superman makes sure that he builds a Superman. Now, also, it's during this issue is the first time that Superman shows up as Blue Electric Superman.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I remember that
and
issue.
Kyle and Kyle Rayner and Flash make fun of his new costume.
Yes, they do.
And his new haircut.
Yes, they do.
The Justice League soon gets called out to California, where the Angel Zariel has come to Earth, and he's pursued by renegade angels working for Asmodel. Soon, Asmodel himself shows up, and most of the team has to battle him, while Superman, in his blue energy form, has to stop Neron, which is basically DC's devil, and the Demons 3 from causing the moon to fall out of the sky. Superman stops the moon from falling out of the sky. Remember I said it was big, bold concept?
Yeah.
You said that too? Let me put that again. Superman stops the moon from falling out of the sky.
I've not read this issue, but it sounds beautiful.
He then wrestles an angel, Asmodel, to a standstill, with Zor-El and Green Lantern managing to build a device with his power ring that banishes the other angels off of the Earth. This is kind of the idea that Zor-El can see it, and he sort of like puts it into Kyle's mind, and Kyle builds it with the ring, which I think is great.
So we were wondering today, listeners, if you had time to donate to the Church of the Justice League.
Aztec shortly joins the team after. He's a great character that was invented by Grant Morrison and Mark Miller, who designed him in this 10-issue series. He has the sort of Aztec-y helmet. He looks like the sun. That, by the way, is a great miniseries, and Aztec is such a cool character.
Cool.
Shortly, it brings the roster up to 9, briefly. But then after that, this is where John Byrne decides to kill Wonder Woman. And she leaves the team, but eventually Hippolyta Wonder Woman joins the team.
Why?
In opposition to the new league, Lex Luthor decides to form a new Injustice gang consisting of himself, Cersei, the Joker, Ocean Master, Mirror Master, and Dr. Light. Luthor has acquired the Rock of Ages, which has granted him extensive power, and he builds a secret lair for the gang on an orbiting satellite. Building hard light holograms in the form of the Justice League members, the Injustice gang commences attack on Star City, massacring many people before the league can stop the holograms. And during the battle, Aquaman senses the mind of his brother, Ocean Master, controlling one of the holograms. And this helped the team figure out that there is a new Injustice gang.
I hate hard light holograms.
Yep.
As a concept. Yep.
The Lantern, get back on the trail, and Suvran cover the truth about Luthor and his new gang. Green Arrow, the new young Green Arrow, which is Connor Hawke,
the cool Green Arrow,
is corrupted by Cersei and becomes a mole, while Batman manages to contact Mirror Master and gets him to become a turncoat for the Injustice gang because he offers him more money.
Yeah.
The JLA also recruits Plastic Man, E.L. O'Brien, who's much cooler than Elongated Man, who managed to infiltrate the satellite and poses as the Joker after tying up the real Joker, because Plastic Man is a shape changer.
Yes.
Superman and Martian Manhunter attempt to infiltrate the gang's lair, only discovered to be booby trapped. Meanwhile, Metron arrives and warns the team about Luthor's possession of the Rock of Ages, and he takes Aquaman, Flash, and Green Lantern on a mission to Wonderworld before promising to return them. Now, Wonderworld is outside of the DC multiverse, and if you look at the map that they introduced, that Grant Morrison made a couple years ago, actually, for the multiverse, Wonderworld is on that map.
Ooh.
So he was planning it this early.
You're dropping so many Easter eggs this lesson.
Traveling faster than light, Aquaman, Green Lantern, and Flash end up returning to Earth 15 years in the future after their visit to Wonderworld, a future where Darkseid has conquered the Earth after the destruction by Lex Luthor of the Rock of Ages. Their minds assert themselves into their future bodies. Kyle finds himself transformed into one of Darkseid's drone soldiers. Wally is sick and out of shape. And then Aquaman is just an old man. Superman and John Jones are dead in this universe, and they find out that Batman has been missing for 8 years. Diana, however, is alive and doing her best to lead a resistance against Darkseid, because half of the Earth's population has been turned into drones. All that's left of the Justice League is Diana, Green Arrow Connor Hawke, who now has a gray goatee, the Adam Ray Palmer, Argent, who is a leftover from Dan Jurgens' Teen Titans run, and a reprogrammed Amazo with a brand new Aztec.
Oh, yeah. I remember that Amazo. Yep.
Breaking into Darkseid's palace, the team discovers that Batman is still alive. He managed to defeat Desaad, and he recently has been play-acting as Desaad to Darkseid. Darkseid shows up as Diana battles him. Batman manages to seize control of Metron in his Mobius chair, forcing him to send the three time-traveling heroes back to their proper era to prevent this timeline. Mm-hmm. And as Diana falls to Darkseid, Argent and Aztec successfully destroy his zombie factory on the moon, losing their lives in the process. Batman is defenseless against Darkseid, and the Dark Lord kills him. This leaves the Atom and Green Arrow as the only heroes to defeat Darkseid. And they defeat him because they discover, Batman discovered that Darkseid had a personal shield, and the Atom rides one of Green Arrow's arrows on a light beam through his force field, killing Darkseid.
Wow.
Fortunately, none of this reality happens as the three heroes are restored to their proper place in time, and they prevent the destruction of the Rock of Ages. And Luther even uses its awesome power to bring everyone back to life in the Star City Massacre after a suggestion from Superman. And Green Arrow reveals that he never betrayed the team. He was just allowing Cersei to think about that. And then Mirror Master walks away and the Injustice Gang is defeated. But since there were no deaths in the Star City Massacre, there's no proof to arrest Lex Luthor.
Ooh, now the touchy, touchy.
Now the team briefly considers disbanding after this, but then decide to stay the course and they recruit new members: Steel, Big Barda, Orion, Plastic Man, Wonder Woman, who is actually Hippolyta, and Huntress. And they invite them up with the press to the Watchtower to cover the event. And at that exact moment, Prometheus, who we've covered in a past Geekish lesson, chooses to make his entrance, and he manages to systematically take down the League one by one, exploiting their weaknesses before a humble Batman is finally able to turn the tables. And then also Zuriel joins the team. Now there's a bunch of other cool stuff in this run, and Morrison's run culminated in an arc titled World War III, which involves the New Gods preparing the Earth for a battle against a creature known as Mageddon, which is a super sentient weapon of mass destruction. Now this is the oncoming threat that was teased in Midsummer's Nightmare and teased throughout Grant Morrison's run. Now, I haven't told you everything about Grant Morrison's run because I think it's so amazing and I really want you to read it. Ashley, how much of his run have you read? Do you like his take on the Justice League?
I've read the first two volumes of his run, and I do really like it. I think that the Justice League works best, and I think I'm not a team book person, generally speaking, because I think that characters get short shrifted a lot of the time in favor of whoever is most popular. But I think that this Justice League and the idea of basing it on the Pantheon, whether or not maybe I agree with all of the predetermined choices, it elevates this level of storytelling. And when you can elevate something like superheroes to the level of modern mythology, I think that's where the genre really shines. And I think that's what we should be striving to do. It's enough in the movies that a team up movie is just an action movie. It's not enough in comics where you have unlimited budget to go as crazy as you want. And I think this is the standard to which all Justice League, Avengers, Birds of Prey books should be holding themselves. I really do.
Yeah. And remember, so I told you a little about the run. I'm also going to tell you why I think it is the greatest run on Justice League that has ever been.
Yeah.
It's not only bombastic and mind altering, but I think Morrison attempts to, like you said, bring it beyond an action book and ask questions about the natures of superheroes. Now, a question you can always ask about that is, why can't superheroes actually make the world a better place? Superman can stop wars. Flash can make sure everyone on the planet gets fed. The Green Lantern, of course, could stop any kind of natural disaster. Batman is just rich. So how come they don't do anything? And in the first arc, the Hyper Clan creates a Garden of Eden. And to quote Superman, he says at the very end, the reason why they don't do that is, he says, humankind has to be allowed to climb to its own destiny. We can't carry them there. And it's this recurring motif and that viewpoint that goes throughout all of Grant Morrison's run.
It's sort of that truism of teach a man to fish.
Yes. The second story arc is actually called Fire in the Sky and Heaven on Earth. And it literally has Morrison's own creation, Zor-El, joining the team. Now, the Rogue Angel was rumored to have been created because Morrison was forbidden from bringing back Hawkman. And even during the story, Aquaman confuses him for the Winged Hero. And as I said before, Electric Superman moves the moon and wrestles an angel. Grant Morrison even evolves the Injustice Gang and the Injustice Society and Lex Luthor from a simple businessman. There's a quote from Lex Luthor in it that he says, "We don't fight them in the streets like brawlers. We apply the principles of the boardroom and we plan. We observe." He's like, "We're making a rival company. Prepare for the corporate takeover of the Justice League." Now,
that's cool.
He also does himself and the DC Universe a bit of service because he accepts the necessary changing guard of several younger generation legacy heroes. That was a big thing of the 90s. We have Connor Hawke, Green Arrow, legacy hero. We have Wally West, Flash, legacy character, and Kyle Rayner. There's a scene in this where Superman confesses that he is worried that Kyle is pushing himself past his limits. And John observes, "I don't think he's anywhere near his limits." Mm. I think part of the reason why I love Kyle Rayner and why I think Kyle Rayner is such a great character is because it's 75% Ron Mars, but it's 25% Grant Morrison.
Yeah.
Because Kyle Rayner is essentially the only Green Lantern from 1994 to 2004 for a decade. Now, Rayner was not welcomed by diehard fans who had observed, of course, from the long running Hal Jordan, but Morrison consistently wrote the character as essentially out of his depth. And the newcomer, he was the newcomer for years after accepting his place in the team.
Mm-hmm.
He's the guy that in several scenes always says, "Me? Sure, okay."
Yeah.
When Superman sends him on a mission. A lot of the fans, I think, felt the way that Rayner felt. We're like, "Oh, dude, you're totally the rookie on this book." There's even a scene where Guy Gardner goes, "Are you the Green Lantern or what?" to Kyle.
Yeah.
And there's a really important scene where the League crosses over in one of the storylines I didn't tell you about, where Daniel, the Lord of the Dreaming, asks Kyle at one point, "Why do you hesitate each time? The man Jordan, who wore the ring before you, why does he overshadow all of your thoughts and actions?" Now, Kyle, over the course of Morrison's run, finds himself. He undergoes a full emotional arc and actually becomes a veteran superhero in 40 issues.
Mm-hmm.
He earns his title. He grows up. And it's very much like Daniel the Dreaming says. He says to Kyle at one point, "You will surpass Jordan. You already know what he could never learn. You know fear."
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, Grant Morrison is the writer that made me respect Aquaman.
Ooh,
I've never liked Aquaman before that. And there's a very specific scene in JLA 41 where all the people of the world have been driven mad by Mageddon. And there's a scene on Venice Beach. Fighting breaks down between soldiers and superheroes. Zatanna's there. She can't do anything. Black Canary can't do anything. The Ray can't do anything. And then an Atlantean war machine rises from the oceans and the amplified voice of King Arthur of Atlantis breaks through the beach. And he says this, "Lay down your arms. I'm serious, and I have the firepower to prove it. Swarm protectorate of over 15,000 submarine states, my territory surrounds every continent on the planet. I rule most of this planet's surface and almost all of its depth. So don't even think about picking a fight with the King of Atlantis."
Nice.
I think it's such a badass line.
It is.
It's the first one where also Wonder Woman and Aquaman get like sort of regal respect because she's a princess and he's a king.
Yeah.
And it's one of the first times that I'd ever seen that relationship between the two of them. They sort of have an understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Morrison really in this run, shows respect for the past and helps promote the future. It's blockbuster superheroics with such a strong emotional core. And all that stuff I told you and more is why I think it is the best Justice League run of all time. Now, I'll get off my soapbox. And now we will go to the fictional history of Justice League of America. Did any of that make sense to you?
Absolutely. Made 100% sense to me.
Okay. Did it win you over a little bit more?
I didn't need winning over, but I would say that you made a very articulate case.
All right. Cool. All right. So back to the fictional history of Justice League. Now, Mark Waid took over the title. He started with Tower of Babel.
Mm-hmm.
And this startling story saw Batman's villain Ra's al Ghul take out the League one member at a time. But in a twist, it's revealed that the villain's ideas came so for none other than Batman, who is revealed to have kept secret files on how to defeat all his powerful colleagues. And I actually think it's a really logical move, and it's really actually typical of Batman's controlling and slightly paranoid personality. Mm-hmm. Of course, the League is rallied and they defeat Ra's, but it took Batman's plans of betrayal to betray the League's trust, and they kick him out.
Oh, no, Batman.
Yep. Next story, there was a story where the Leaguers are separated from their civilian alter egos, and the villains were new inventions named the Cathexis and the Id, and in the story's conclusion, the League actually merges with their alter egos. It's actually a really cool run. It's drawn by Brian Hitch. And then eventually, after a couple more storylines, our guest, Mark Waid, left the book, which led to the Joe Kelly run on the book, which had an awesome storyline called The Obsidian Age, where the Justice League disappears into the past, and Nightwing gets picked as the leader of the new replacement Justice League.
Yay.
Much to the chagrin of Green Arrow. But then Identity Crisis happened. And Ashley, what happened in Identity Crisis?
In Identity Crisis, we sort of flash back to something that happened during the satellite era, which you will know from having listened to our last
episode. And I'll tell
episode,
you about it.
Where Sue Dibney dies.
Mm-hmm.
And Ralph Dibney suddenly becomes an important character. We all have to deal with that. And a bunch of secrets about the Justice League identities get out there, and they're forced to protect everyone they love.
Yes.
Sort of.
That's not quite, but sure.
Identity Crisis is hard to explain, guys.
So basically, the events of Identity Crisis actually highlighted the ethical conflicts in the League's early lineup. When Dr. Light is assaulted by Sue, when Dr. Light assaults Sue Dibney on the JLA satellite and threatens to attack significant others, Zatanna erased his memories and tampered with his mind, basically magically lobotomizing him.
Yeah.
We soon find out that he was not the only one whose memories were tampered with. Batman was caught up when wiping Dr. Light's mind, knowing that he wouldn't prove it, they also wiped Batman's mind. This revelation involving current League members and their longtime comrades forced the League to split when it was needed most. Aquaman and John Stewart attempted the League to keep going, but failed due to numerous problems and issues that were created by the fast approaching Infinite Crisis. Ashley, what is Infinite Crisis?
Infinite Crisis is Superboy Prime gets really, really mad and he punches a hole in reality, basically to reset the status quo.
Yep, and the multiverse comes back. And basically, soon after that, we get to Final Crisis, where his dark side wins and takes over the Earth. And after the events of Final Crisis and Cry for Justice, a new proactive Justice League, similar to Captain Atom's Extreme Justice, is founded by Hal Jordan Oliver Queen. This is very short-lived, and although some of the membership actually happened to carry over to the proper Justice League that was largely composed of second-generation heroes, including team leader Dick Grayson, who at the time was Batman, other team members included Jade, Supergirl, Donna Troy, Cyborg, and Mon-El, who was filling in for Superman.
Man, I forget that Jade existed now, because she's nowhere to be seen.
This League actually continued up until Flashpoint, which altered the entire timeline. And Ashley, can you tell us very briefly what is Flashpoint?
Flashpoint is Barry Allen misses his mom, so he runs back in time and resets the universe, and everyone gets more lines on their costumes.
Basically, yes. So we come into the New 52. All the DC titles were canceled, and as relaunched as the New 52, every title started at issue one, and it rebooted DC's continuity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Justice League of America was relaunched as Justice League. It was written by Jeff Johns, and it was drawn by Jim Lee. It was the first of the new titles released, and it came out on the same day as the final issue of Flashpoint. I can remember going to the comic book shop on that day and picking up both those titles.
That's smart from a marketing perspective.
The first six-issue storyline in Justice League is set 5 years in the past of the universe and features a new origin for the team. The series then shifted to the present in issue seven. The initial roster consisted of Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, Hal Jordan, Aquaman, The Flash, Barry Allen, and Cyborg. While Adam, Rhonda Panetta, Firestorm, Ronnie Raymond, and Element Woman joined later as additional members. The first team of the Justice League met when Darkseid invaded the planet with his parademons and his search for the anti-life equation, and it's a giant punch fest against Darkseid and his evasion.
Yeah, it's a fun action story.
The new Justice League of America is entirely separate from the Justice League, as the new Justice League of America was actually formed by Amanda Waller and consists of Steve Trevor, Martian Manhunter, Green Arrow, Hawkman, Catwoman, the new Green Lantern Simon Baz, Stargirl, Katana, and Vibe. Now, the new Atom, Rhonda Panetta, is also revealed to be a member of the Justice League of America, and she actually works as a spy to gain intel on the Justice League, reporting to Amanda Waller and Steve Trevor.
Wow.
It is later revealed that she is another betrayer of the Justice League of America. She's a double mole. We'll find out. Each member of the Justice League America actually is intended to be a counterpart to the members of the Justice League in case the Justice League would ever go rogue because they're not controlled.
Sure.
Now, the Justice League, Justice League of America, and the Justice League Dark clash in the Trinity War storyline. And Shazam, whose origin is told up as a backup feature in Justice League, joins the Justice League. Now, Adam is revealed, as I told you, to be revealed come from a parallel universe. And she is, in fact, a mole spying on both teams for the evil crime syndicate of Earth 3.
Oh, no.
So she's the mole. The syndicate roundly defeats the Ascendable Leagues and triggers the Forever Evil crossover event where they take over the world. And in the aftermath of Forever Evil, following their crucial and public role in defeating the crime syndicate, Lex Luthor and Captain Cold join the Justice League. And a young woman named Jessica Cruz joins the team after becoming attached to crime syndicate's sentient power ring, eventually gaining control of its Green Lantern like abilities.
Cool.
Now, the team had their final adventure in the New 52 with a storyline called Darkseid War, where basically some of the team gets godlike powers, they meet Mr. Miracle, and they see the Darkseid in the Anti-Monitor fight. And then we come up to DC Rebirth, which is a soft reboot of the DC Universe, and there was the event called Justice League versus Suicide Squad, mm-hmm. which kind of can be explained in this title, but actually, what is that event?
The Justice League and the Suicide Squad fight each other, and some characters have to choose who they want their alliances to lie with.
There you go. That's basically it. And during the events of Justice League versus Suicide Squad, who was actually written by a former guest of the podcast, Joshua Williamson.
What?
Maxwell Lord, remember him?
Yes.
Uses the Heart of Darkness to infect Superman, Wonder Woman, Aquaman, The Flash, Cyborg, and the two Green Lanterns, because Simon Baz and Jessica Cruz are on the Justice League now. And in order to stop Lord and the infected Justice League members, Batman recruits and temporarily induct Suicide Squad members Deadshot, Harley Quinn, Killer Croc, Captain Boomerang, Killer Frost, and Lobo, who is a member of Waller's first Suicide Squad, into the Justice League. Following this crisis, Batman concludes that the world needs a more human, relatable hero to prepare for a new threat, and he assembles his new Justice League, selecting Killer Frost due to reactions in the battle with Lord. Black Canary joins the team to act as the team consciousness, Lobo joins because of a favor he owes to Batman, and the Atom and Ray are joined as well, with Vixen to act as the team's core, basically due to her ability to coordinate many things in her life.
Yeah.
And that's where we are with the current Justice League.
Ooh.
There's a lot right there,
it
right?
It is a lot.
All right, let's move into our recommended reading,
where Professor Jason is going to throw down a bunch of amazing titles that you can read if you want to blow your mind open with more Justice League stories. You can find them at geekhistorylesson.com/recommended reading. You click on the widget, you buy the book, you have an amazing time, and a little bit comes back our way so we can keep curating these lists for you.
The first choice is JLA, the Deluxe Edition, Volume 1. It is a soft cover that they published a couple years ago. There's also a hardcover version of this if you want it. This is Grant Morrison and Howard Porter's run. I believe it collects the first 10 issues.
Yes.
It gives you like the first two arcs and that amazing Tomorrow Woman issue that I talked about. It is amazing. The first four issues are so introductory. Anybody, if you've never read a Justice League title before, can read them. And believe me, I know, because I didn't know jack about the Justice League when I was a kid, and I started on issue one and I was just fine.
And it's beautiful.
It's beautiful. And again, I told you, it's the start of the greatest Justice League run of all time.
Yeah.
My second pick is JLA Year One, the Deluxe Edition. It is the Justice League's definite origin. This is that Silver Age tale by Mark Waid and Brian Augustin. It was just republished in an amazing hardcover.
Yeah.
It looks beautiful. It has a brand new cover. This is also a great reading spot if you want to start with the Justice League and you want to go maybe a little, have a Silver Age feel. You want some Hal Jordan, mm-hmm. you want some Martian Manor. You know, it is a more innocent tale. It's 12 issues, but it's so, so good.
This was the first Justice League origin I ever read.
Yes. And then I'm going to give you the newest Justice League origin, Justice League Volume 1 Origin for the New 52.
Mm-hmm.
This is the storyline I told you about where it's the team that most resembles the movie, Cyborg's on the team, and they fight Darkseid. So if you're looking for something that really resembles the new movie, I think Justice League Volume 1 Origin, the New 52, is where you want to go.
I think you did an amazing job, because this is maybe the only episode where all of our books are new reader friendly and recommended mm-hmm. reading, and that's a powerful tool.
And I think you should own all three of them.
I do too.
There you go. So, all right, let's move into our discussion, and to talk more about the Justice League, I felt that we had to have a person that had actually written the Justice League. Now, he has written JLA Year One that I just mentioned in our recommended reading. He has written JLA, and he has written one of of the greatest runs on The Flash, what I think is the greatest run on The Flash of all time. He's the current writer of Captain America. Please welcome to Geek History Lesson, the wondrous Mark Wade. Hey, Mark, welcome to Geek History Lesson.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Now, as a writer of a comic book called Justice League, you wrote that in your career. How intimidating was it for you to take on the task of writing Justice League?
It was doubly intimidating, not just because they're the Justice League, but also because, if you'll remember, I followed Grant Morrison, which
yes.
is a very, very hard act to follow.
Would you think it would have been better if it had been like, what if you had started at JLA issue number one? Do you think the intimidation factor would have been less?
I think it would have been less. I actually think it would have been a little less. But again, you are dealing with the Magnificent Seven. At least that's the Justice League that I know. Mm-hmm. That's the Justice League that feels like the Justice League. Anytime you don't have Superman, Batman, or Wonder Woman in it, it doesn't feel like the Justice League.
Mm-hmm. Now, you also wrote a couple of issues in the middle of Grant Morrison's JLA run. You did a couple pickups for him. Now, how closely did you work with him on those issues, or did he just basically let you have free reign?
Oh, he let me have free reign, just as if you'll remember, that was part of the pact by which I took a year off of Flash so that he and Mark Millar could do it, step in for me. And so the idea was that I'd have extra time. And then it turns out that Grant was working so much on Flash that he ran behind on his Justice League deadline. So it came to me to step in for him. So really, we just switched gigs for a few months.
Nice. Now, how do you see the Justice League? Because you are a massive DC fan. You have been a DC editor. How do you see the Justice League as different from other comic superhero teams?
That they're the all-star team. They are not family bound. They don't have a common origin or anything like that. They're not the X-Men. They're not, bound by any sort of specific mission. They are just the all-star team. And that is, they're the very best at what they do. The difference between them and the Avengers is that while the Avengers certainly has a lot of might and clout on its end, I've always said that the Avengers' biggest superpower and its biggest asset is that it has Tony Stark's money. So with the Avengers, they can just keep throwing things at the villains over and over again if they need to, because mm-hmm. they've got an inexhaustible supply of resources and money, and they can call in a million other Avengers. With the Justice League, they kind of got to roll up their sleeves and do it themselves.
Now, you don't see the comparison that some fans would say, maybe, that Bruce Wayne is kind of the same idea as Tony Stark, or is the idea that Superman's might kind of beats the might of Tony Stark's wallet?
It's more the latter. I mean, mm-hmm. yeah, Bruce Wayne's got his money, but Bruce Wayne doesn't traditionally spend a lot of it funding the Justice League, at least not on camera. Mm-hmm. Whereas, the Avengers is pretty inseparable from Tony Stark's money. If you'll remember, their very first headquarters was Avengers Mansion, which was a gift from Tony Stark and a transformed mansion from the Stark family.
What is your favorite version of the Justice League? What's your favorite team?
As old fashioned as it is to say, it is the Magnificent Seven. It is the, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, Flash, Martian Manhunter, Aquaman. Though that seems to me to be the Justice League. But I'll also give you Green Arrow. I'll give you the Atom. I'll give you Elongated Man. I tend to tune out after Red Tornado. And after that, I am old enough where everyone after that is one of the new Justice Leaguers to me.
Yeah, well, you're at a certain point where almost everybody in the DC universe, I think, has been a Justice League member now.
Pretty much at some point, yeah. Some, more ill-advisedly than others, yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, personally for me, you have written the greatest Flash run that will ever be.
So, well, thank you.
Yes, I personally believe that. I think what you did with Wally West was amazing. Now, you also have written what I think is a spectacular run on Justice League. Now, I want to ask, as a comic book writer, you were writing Wally West in his solo title around the same time or very close to when you were writing Wally West in Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what is the difference between writing a team book, and do you have to sometimes check your biases on which characters you like better as trying to juggle the amount of time you give certain characters in your stories?
No, in fact, what I do, and this is true of all team books that I'm working on, is that I literally make trading cards. If they're available, I'll take trading cards. If not, you know, I'll make little cardboard standees or anything I need to, so that they are sort of chess pieces, so that I can have them on my desk and literally move them around as I, you know, as I get halfway through a story, I'll realize, oh, I haven't had Aquaman do anything for a few pages, so I'll move him to the front, you know, and then, oh, wait, Wonder Woman hasn't said anything for a little while, so I move her around. So I literally move them like chess pieces so that I can remember who has had something to do recently and who still needs some screen time.
That's actually a genius writing tip. Did you discover that yourself? Or?
Yes, I did it. As far as I know, I did it myself, yes.
Now, the Justice League also sometimes tends to have storylines where they'll fight a lot of battles in space. Do you prefer a Justice League story that's Earth-based or deep into the cosmic-y?
You know, I really have no preference. I think the space adventures are more interesting because they're a little more unique. Again, trying to get them away from the Avengers model or the Teen Titans model. Mm-hmm. This is that the Justice League has the power to go out in space and do cosmic-y things.
Interesting. Now, do you have a favorite villain that the Justice League faces off of?
I have a few, and some are obvious and some are less obvious. I think that Amazo, I think, is a good villain because, again, all the powers of the Justice League. I like to gravitate towards the villains who don't go at them toe-to-toe, like you're not brawlers, but instead guys who do interesting things. As goofy as it is, I like Amos Fortune a lot. There's something to be done with a character who controls luck and controls probability, and I think there's, you know, that interests me. I think, you know, looking back on the Justice League Rogues Gallery, I mean, those are the ones. If I shamefacedly admit that Dr. Destiny and Amos Fortune are the ones that I keep coming back to because, again, they're not punchers. Mm. They are all about schemes.
Those are great choices. Amos Fortune is a deep cut, and I really like that.
Yeah.
Now, you also are responsible for JLA Year One. It was just recently collected in a super nice hardcover. And I want to ask you, what was it like to piece together a Justice League origin story and fit it into the continuity of the DC universe at the time? Because it was sort of the origin that had always been there, but you kind of expanded on it and made it feel, I would say, more realistic.
Well, thank you. I mean, you know, part of the trick obviously was working Black Canary in. When I was editing Secret Origins, that's when we did the first post-crisis origin of the Justice League, and we needed someone to fill the Wonder Woman role, because at that point in DC continuity, you know, Wonder Woman was a new mm-hmm. character, wouldn't have been around for the Justice League. So we cast around a lot. I remember that Keith Giffen suggested that we use the Golden Age character Miss America and then have her killed off in the origin so that the team names themselves the Justice League of America in her honor.
Interesting.
We could have gone that way. I remember Roy Thomas, however, had plans for her. And I wish I could remember who said Black Canary, but that was a terrific call and a much better call than Miss America would have been. So, you know, I was being there at ground zero when we reconstructed the Justice League history. It wasn't really hard to go in there and pull out from those characters. It was a different writing experience than I've ever had in that a lot of times I make stuff up on the fly. A lot of my work is, all right, I get to the end of the issue and I got a cliffhanger. I'm not sure how to get out of it, but I'll worry about it a month from now. Whereas with JLA Year One, Brian Augustin and I mean, Brian was the co-writer mm-hmm. on this. Brian and Augustin and I talked out every thread, and I literally covered my office floor in note cards so I could track everybody's individual stories and how they fell into certain issues and so forth. So it was a very structured piece of work.
Now, I want to ask you as well, spoilers for this over 10-year-old storyline, but at the very end, we learn that Green Arrow is the secret financier of the Justice League. Is that an idea that you have always had, or is that introduced in DC continuity somewhere?
No. We just pulled that out for that story.
I thought it was such an interesting turn to make that Green Arrow instead of Bruce Wayne.
Well, exactly, because we led you for 11 issues to believe it was Bruce Wayne, which would be the most obvious answer. And so I liked the fact that we were able to do a turn. on the last page, and surprise, it's Oliver Queen who funds the Justice League. And what's more ironic about that is Batman's already a member to some degree, or he's an associate member, but Green Arrow is not a member yet. I like the idea that he's funding the Justice League, kind of figuring that he wants them to be around until they offer him the gig.
Or it's like his secret ticket into the door.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, also, you, in that storyline, you introduce a lot of cool character beats that I have to ask if you've had with yourself since you've been reading these comic books since you were a little kid, like especially the idea that Aquaman is very quiet because sound travels further underwater. Now, is that an idea that you've just always had to and you've been looking for the perfect place to throw it in a comic book?
Yeah, I've been hanging on to that for a long time. I've had that in the chamber for a while. I've had, you know, the idea that Black Canary would have been in a weird relationship with her mother because, you know, adopting her identity as a younger girl, and the idea that Black Canary's uncles, figuratively speaking, would have been the Justice Society of America. You know, it'd been like a child star, like, you know, like Carrie Fisher hanging around the house when Debbie Reynolds brought over, you know, Frank Sinatra or whoever came to visit the house. That's the way it would have been for Dinah growing up.
Now, when looking at the Justice League, and you are a big fan of the Magnificent Seven, who is the leader of the Justice League to you? Who's the default leader?
I honestly don't think they have a default leader.
Interesting. Why?
I don't think anyone's – well, first off, in the Justice League stories I read, it was a rotating leadership. It was, you know, everybody takes a turn. And I like that better than just assuming that Superman is – well, here's the answer, because if they're going to have a leader, then it's going to be Superman.
Yeah.
There's just no other way around it. And so I don't like the idea – first off, I think he'd make a very uncomfortable leader. I don't think Superman sees himself apart and above the rest of the Justice Leaguers in that way. And he's also a terrible leader in that he doesn't understand the criminal mind. He doesn't. Batman does, but Clark Kent, Superman, is, you know, very skilled and has gone up against a bunch of different villains. But when it comes to knowing how to deal with them in a very, you know, non-punchy way, and in a sort of a, you know, devious, stealthy way, he's not good at that. Batman, that's Batman's job. And Batman could be the leader, but, you know, Batman, nobody wants to follow Batman. And also, he's a terrible leader too, because he doesn't want to be the leader. So I kind of like the rotating leadership idea.
It's interesting. Now, here's another question for you to go into your deep cut DC knowledge. If you ever had the chance to write Justice League again, is there a character who, as far as you know, has never been on the team that you would love to bring onto your roster?
That's a good question. I can't think of anyone, honestly. I mean, there's been a ton of them who've been on the roster. As I say, some of them smart and some of them ill-advised. I think Metamorpho was a great character, but a terrible Justice Leaguer. I honestly can't think. There's nobody in my hip pocket that I think would be a great Justice Leaguer.
Nice. Now, do you have any favorite Justice League stories that you love to reread over and over again?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, first off, the Justice League 100 through 102, the Justice Society team up that reintroduces the Seven Soldiers of Victory. That's one of the great Justice League stories of all time. Anything from Len Wein's run back then, anything from late Jerry Conway days, going into the coming right up to the Detroit Justice League, and of course Grant stuff. I know there's stuff in between, but Grant stuff really re-energized the Justice League, and I have a huge amount of respect for what he did there. So that's the stuff I tend to gravitate to. But I'll always, you know, I've got a bunch of issues of Justice League on my iPad, man. If I just ever need to kill 20 minutes, I'll go read, you know, something about the Tornado Tyrant or whatever.
Nice. That's a good call. And Mark, thank you so much for joining us on Geek History Lesson. It was an absolute honor to talk to you. Where can people find you on the internet? And please promote some books so we can read some more excellent comic book stories.
Sure. I'm Mark Waite on Facebook. Can be found there. I used to dabble in Twitter, but it gets a little dark and evil there these days. So I kind of backed off that. And currently I'm working on Captain America for Marvel. I'm working on Avengers from Marvel. We've got a big weekly Avengers title that's coming out that will be, you know, again, a big giant blowout adventure. Champions with Umberto Ramos over at Marvel. That's, you know, those are the ones that are, oh, and Archie Comics, of course, doing Archie Comics, which for those who are not in the know and think it's just the same old goofy 80s, 90s stuff. No, they asked me to sort of refigure it so it's a lot more contemporary and a lot more soap opera-y. And I think we've done a good job of that.
And everyone out there listening right now, the Archie run and Champions books are amazing. Your Champions run actually right now is one of my favorite titles coming out of Marvel. So,
well, thank you.
Well done on that. And then thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Honestly, any chance to talk to you about The Flash, it's a good day for me.
Now, before I let you go, I actually have some Justice League questions for you.
Uh-oh. I'm now on the spotlight. All right.
Well, I'm on the spotlight. So this is one of my favorite Justice League questions. So obviously, Superman and Batman were sort of nominal members in the very first few adventures, but that's because the Batman and Superman editors at the time thought they were overexposed. So they didn't let editor Julie Schwartz use Superman and Batman any length or any great depth. What's the first cover that Superman and Batman were actually on?
Oh, my prediction is going to be, I'm going to say, is it Justice League of America number 7 where they redo the origin, or they actually show you the origin for the first time?
First off, that was issue 9.
Oh, there you go.
For the love of God. And secondly, no, they are not on that cover.
Oh, interesting. Okay, that's the one I would have figured. What's their first cover?
Their first cover is Justice League number 5, The Deadly Dreams of Dr. Destiny, which When Gravity Went Wild. I'm sorry, now I got one wrong. Justice League number 5, When Gravity Went Wild. If you look at the cover, you've got 5 Justice Leaguers flying up at you because gravity has gone amok. And then if you look way deep in the background, little teeny tiny figures of Superman and Batman. That was their very first appearance on a Justice League cover.
Wow. Fun facts from Mark Waid. That's
there you go.
That's why I'm so happy I invited you to talk to us about the Justice League. Thank you so much again.
My pleasure.
Thanks to Mark Waid for joining us on today's lesson. Please go check out his books. Go follow him on social media. And if you want to hear more from Mark, we actually talked to him for about 15 more minutes about his secret origins of his comic career. And we pick his brain about some of his other books, including Daredevil and Captain America. And you can find that on our Patreon exclusive podcast, Geek History Lesson Extra. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N, and donate to our lovely podcast. And you get to listen to that. It's a great conversation. We go deep cuts on a lot of his other comic book career.
Love it.
All right, so let's move into the teaching tweet.
We're in 140 characters or less because we like to play by the classic rules. Professor Jason is going to summarize everything he just taught you in these last two lessons about the Justice League.
Justice League. An alien. A god. A speedster. A cop. A king. A robot. And a rich guy in a leather bat suit. The world's greatest heroes.
That was amazing. I want one of those black shirts with the bright writing that says, like, a god and a guy in a leather bat suit and a king.
We could do that. We could make that. There's no reason why we couldn't make that a shirt.
Oh, that sounds amazing. I'll buy the first one if you want to make that. That tweet is too good to not preserve forever on clothing worn next to my body.
Sure. All right, let's move to the Geek History Lesson Honor Roll. Ashley, what is that and how can they get on there?
Well, I'm so glad that you asked. The Honor Roll is, if you go over to iTunes and you leave us a 5-star review and tell us what you like about the podcast, you will be inducted into an exclusive club, the Hall of Fame over here at the Mind University.
Yes, and this week we're going to be joined in the honor roll by Gotta Get By, who wrote this 5-star review. Now I really want a Plastic Man lesson.
Oh!
And especially after this lesson, because Plastic Man is an essential part of the JLA, mm-hmm. I'm just going to tell you, there would be a lot of Grant Morrissey JLA stories in this lesson.
Yeah, there would be.
Plastic Man. So, Gotta Get By, welcome to the amazing Honor Roll Student Lounge. There's coffee in the corner, And we also have a cappuccino machine. So welcome.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to make your own cappuccino, though. Like, we're working towards a barista.
Totally.
That's a different Patreon level.
So, so welcome to the GHL Honor Roll. If you want to join him, all you got to do is go over to iTunes and give us 5 stars because it helps the show out, helps the visibility of the show out, helps more people find the show in their search. And don't forget that while you're on there on iTunes, you can download the show and you can also download it on Stitcher and Spotify. Ashley, nobody suggested Justice League, but if they want to suggest a Plastic Man lesson, where could they go do that?
Yeah, if you want to be really cool, and we actually already have requests for Plastic Man, just add on to that list. You can hit us up at geekhistorylesson.com, facebook.com/geekhistorylesson, and on Twitter at GHL Podcast. There's a gazillion ways to contact us in all those places.
Mm-hmm. And don't forget to support us on patreon.com/drawin, because it's the only way that this show can stay free for you. And if you hate all the ads on our show, then go over to Patreon, because when it hits a certain level, the ads go away.
Yeah.
And you can follow us on Twitter at Jawin, JAWIIN. Follow Ashley on Twitter at Ashley V. Robinson. And you can follow the show on Twitter at GHL Podcast. This was our big two-parter of the Justice League. It was a long time coming. And, episode 200's on the horizon here.
Yeah, and we don't know what we're doing for it yet.
No ideas at all. I know some people wanted to do X-Force. I don't know if we want to do X-Force, or maybe 200 is where we dive deep in the Legion of Superheroes and say, screw it all.
Maybe.
I don't know. If you have some ideas for our 200th episode, we'd love to hear it. Of course, you could find that on, all the places where you suggest lessons. I'm just rambling right now.
Cool.
So bombastic. I can't believe we talked to Mark Waid.
I can't believe you got up on your soapbox. That was awesome.
I did get on my soapbox.
I really liked that. That was my favorite part of the lesson.
When I got on the soapbox and told you why that run is so good?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's good. There
I
you
like
go.
It. Let's see all if right. anyone else liked it.
Tweet I don't
us
know.
If you're
they
listening to this
hate
conversation.
Us. All right, so that is it. Yes, tweet us at #JusticeForJason
there
if you
go.
Stayed all the way to the end. And, I'll just give you a thumbs up probably on Twitter. That's probably all I'm going to do. I'm not going to give you money.
Just send you a fun gif.
Yeah, there you go. But I think this was Justice League. I was very intimidated about this lesson, but I thought it turned out pretty well.
I thought it turned out really well.
And I can't believe Mark Waid agreed to be on this podcast.
I know.
I kind of fanboyed out hard on Mark Waid. I really did.
That's okay. Mark Waid's a really nice guy.
He's a lovely gentleman. Go buy his comic books. This is it for Geek History Lesson, where I'm going to stop rambling. I am Jason Rambling Justice Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson. And Professor Justice, will you please dismiss the class?
You're dressed like a bat. I could dig it.